And we are having a gardening call-in show here this morning. Joining me is Lee Skidmore, and this is a potpourri of topics. We'll be speaking about blossom end rot. That sounds exciting. Watering when we aren't getting rain, how to save seeds, dry herbs, planning for overwintering, keeping your tools sharp, and keeping records as well as taking pictures. That's some of it. And if you have gardening questions, you can give us a call, 225-9655, 1-800-557-5723. Where shall we start, Lee? Should we start with the water situation, given the weather we're having here?
Yes, let's start there. Like I was telling you earlier, it was 82 degrees in my front yard yesterday, and I was loving it, and so were the weeds. But as far as the vegetables and the container plants, they were somewhat stressed. And the first thing you want to do when we're not getting the rain that we're used to and we're having to water is stop fertilizing, because you don't want your plants to be trying to rapidly grow when they don't have enough water.
Okay, I already aired yesterday doing that.
So go home and add some water, and that will help. What we need to do is try and keep the plants keep the soil at a consistent moisture level. And you can do that by watering. Most places that I did some research recommend watering early in the morning, because then there's less evaporation, and the plant has a time to, you know, the water's off the leaves before it gets so hot. And what you want to do is water deep so that the roots go deeper into the pot or the soil, so that that's where the water will, you know, as it goes down through the pot, it will be at the bottom last. And in the soil, it's where the roots will stay coolest.
So can you water midday, or is that a bad idea?
You can water anytime you want. It's whenever you have the time to do it. It's just, you know, most...
Early morning is
best. That way the plant has water to go through the day.
Okay. I'll be running home soon. Okay. any other tricks about watering? Should you keep it off the leaves, for example, or is that okay if you get the leaves wet?
I don't think that matters, because you do want to, you know, hose off the plants, keep the dust off. Right now we have the spittle bugs.
You know, that looks like those. I hate those.
Oh. Well, just take your hose and wash them off. It will help with aphids. And keep the leaves clean so that they can absorb more sunshine.
Okay. Any other things to think about? Now, you mentioned don't fertilize for now. So when it starts raining again, you can start fertilizing? Is that a good rule of thumb?
You can. But you want to stop fertilizing when the plants start to decline, because it is getting close to the end of the growing season. I mean, we're not going to have 50,000 new flowers suddenly appear because they got water. But, yeah, you can fertilize.
Okay. Any other things to think about during this hot weather spell? It sounds like we're going to have a full week of sunshine or near sunshine.
I know, and that's wonderful. Just keep checking. If you keep the surface of the soil fluffed, is like take your little three-pronged trowel and fluff that up. It will dry out faster, make it, you know, don't go real deep. Slugs don't like that, so they won't be crawling across that as much. You want to keep things cleaned out as they wither and drop from the top of the soil, so you don't have mold and mildew and slugs and that kind of stuff. But just if you've been successful up to this point with your garden, keep doing what you're doing.
Okay. Now I find this interesting. Blossom end rot. What is that?
Well, most of us see it on tomatoes, and it's a lack of calcium in the soil. And that's the lack of calcium is
exasperated.
Caused by over fertilization, which caused the plants to grow too fast, or inconsistent watering. You know, today it's dry, tomorrow it's standing in water. So, and you can buy calcium at the hardware stores and at the nurseries. You can put it on as a spray, or you can mix it in with the soil. If you're planning for long-term, planting your tomatoes in the same place, you can buy crushed limestone and put in there. You can put all of your eggshells, crumble them up, and mix them in with your soil, and that provides calcium. But it's what it actually is where the blossom was and the fruit's developing from that point. It's that hard, dry, black, rotting space on the bottom. And as soon as you see it, you need to clip the...
Well, you say on the bottom of the plant?
No, on the bottom of the tomato or the pepper or the eggplant.
Okay.
You know, when the little tomato starts to develop, you can see where the blossom was because it has...
Right, right.
Okay, that's where it develops.
Interesting. So then it starts rotting out your tomato,
yes,
or whatever it may be.
Yes. And you just want to take your clippers and remove that. You don't want to pull it because you don't want to damage the plant.
Okay, so if you see that, you'd be seeing like kind of a soft black? Or
you know,
is it hard?
It's not soft. It's hard.
Okay.
Well, it's not like the tabletop, but it's hard for a tomato plant.
It's not a mushy thing.
It's not a mushy thing, and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And there's no way to stop it from growing or it getting bigger, so you just clip it off and toss it out.
And then add calcium.
You can add calcium, yeah.
And that's a lack of calcium. It's interesting that a lack of calcium would cause something like that.
It is, but...
One never knows.
One never knows.
Okay, and it's specific to certain plants?
Tomatoes, peppers, and eggplant are what it's on the most. And it's an easily solvable situation.
Okay, so. Interesting. Again, this is a call-in show. If you have any questions, you can give us a call at 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. And you were saying it's getting to the end of the growing season. Also you were going to talk about saving the seeds. Are things going to seed already?
Well, what I've been
getting ready.
Well, you need to be ready for when the seeds are ready. The blue poppies, the Himalayan poppies, Mechanopsis, are their pods are drying. So you want to be prepared if you want to save them and try and raise them from seed to catch them and keep them. Also, columbine are setting seeds rapidly right now. And you want to watch the seed pods. And as they change from that bright, healthy green look to starting to go into light brown and then dark brown, and they get rather firm, be prepared to clip the whole seed head. Take it inside, put it in a cool, dry place, and let it finish ripening. And with your columbine seeds, if you shake that seed head, they actually rattle. Sounds like a rattle. And so then you want to let those dry, and you can either keep the whole part of the plant that you cut off, or you can crumble up the seed pods and get the seeds out that way. And then you want to let those finish drying. And then I just fold mine up in wax paper, tape it shut. So then I label it what it is, and like it would be 714 for my columbine seeds. And then in the spring, you're ready to just sow them, and they hopefully sprout.
So you could, though, you either crush the seed pod or you could keep the seed pod intact, and then in the spring, crack it open.
Crack it open. Uh-huh. Okay. It's a big surprise because some of the seeds are quite large, like your nasturtiums, or some of them are tiny, like carrot seeds. Nasturtiums are good to save seeds. What else do I see? Primroses. If you've got a special primrose and you don't have very many and it doesn't set out new plantlets, often you can try the seeds. Hostas. You can do anything that has seeds, you can try and dry or save.
So you mentioned put them in wax paper, make like a little envelope, so to speak,
right,
out of wax paper.
Uh-huh.
Then where do you put it? What do you do with them?
I have a shoebox in my garage, and I put them in there, and it just labels seeds. And whenever I get ready to try seeds, then I go and get whatever I want and start sowing it. And I sow right in the garden, right around where I want it to grow.
And that would be, you're storing it in a cool, dry place,
yes,
essentially?
In the garage is a good place.
Okay. Also, anything else, I guess, about saving seeds to keep in mind?
Try it. You never know what you're going to get. And like with your columbines, they may cross-pollinate, and so you never know what you're going to get as far as flowers the next year.
Might have different varieties.
You might have different.
You also were speaking about drying herbs. Or
yes.
Herbs, however one wishes to pronounce it. I hear both. So,
well, and however you pronounce it, they're wonderful. Right now, sage and basil and lavender are tremendous. And you can cut you know, several stalks, tie them together, and hang them in a cool, dry place to dry. And you want some air circulation so that they don't mold. Or you can, like with your basil leaves, you can pick them, put them in like a little basket, and fluff them up so that they dry consistently. Or I put mine in a dehydrator and then put them in Ziploc bags and put them wherever you want, wherever you keep your other spices is a good place. I like to use mine quickly because they have that really fresh taste. You can also freeze them. With your basil, you can make pesto. With your lavender, you can make little pillows for your lingerie drawers or your sweater drawer. And it's fun. And it's I think everybody should try everything at least once.
So with, I guess I've had the issue of things molding with the moisture here. Mm-hmm. So the key is to keep air circulating?
Yes. If you, you know, I hang mine in the garage, and they're right by the door that you go in and out. And so every time you open the door, there's more air in there. Plus, my garage is not airtight, so there's always air coming in. You could hang them maybe in your pantry where that they would get movement of air. If it's in a basket, you know, it's got airflow through the weave. You can also just fluff that up with your hands. And then when it's completely dry, decide where you want to store them.
How often does it need air circulation? Just a little bit each day, or does it need semi-constant?
It should be constant, yeah.
So with the fluffing up, how often would you have to circulate
them,
the basket?
Every time you go by, fluff it up.
Okay.
But I prefer the dehydrator. Put them in on just airflow, spread them over the trays, and then when they're dry, which with a leaf that's thin doesn't take very long, and then I just put them in Ziploc bags and put them in with my spice cabinet.
You also mentioned freezing them. What is the trick to freezing them?
They won't have that bright, perfect, beautiful green color after you freeze them. You can freeze them in water, so you could add that to spaghetti sauce. You can puree them and make pesto. And then freeze that, and that's, I think, what most people do with basil or all of your Italian herbs you can do that with. And just, like, freeze them in your ice cube containers.
So you said freeze them in water, so you actually need to soak them as opposed to just laying them in the thing in a plastic bag and freezing the bag of dry, or, you
right.
know, just fresh.
If you put them in your ice cube trays, fill it. And then put some water in there so that they'll stay together and they'll be much easier to control. They won't be floating around.
Okay. And we do have a caller on the line, and it's Deborah. Good morning.
Good morning.
Are you there? And you're asking about how do we plant the raspberry roots. KRBD has these raspberry roots that someone gave us to give away. And I've heard mixed things. So do you know, Lee, the best way to plant a raspberry root?
I do not. But what we do with garden, you know, when they're donated to Garden Club, we put them in pots and get them rooted. You can put them in water. You can put them in soil. And just when they get rooted, then plant them where you want them to grow. Some people take and lay the whole stem down, cover it up. With some of the leaves sticking out so that it roots in several different places. I would plant it like I planted any berry vine.
I'm just wondering how deep to plant them.
I would do so that they've got some, so that they would be stable. I would plant 4 to 6 inches.
I went online, actually, and looked at a video, I guess, of them planting them, and they actually did it dry. Now, I was told you should soak them first and then plant them. In this video, they basically just planted them, and probably it was, say, 3 inches deep or something like that, 3-4 inches deep. I guess just water away, but I don't know if it's better to soak them first or not. Do you know?
Rehydrate them. If they've been out for a while, that would certainly give them a boost when you do plant them.
Okay. Does that help, Deborah, or do you have other questions?
Excellent. And I'm very grateful to get them.
Okay. Good luck with that. And I should remind folks, if you're interested in those plants, they're here. So drop on by, and we have raspberry roots to give away. And Deborah, do you have any other question?
No, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. If you have a question, give us a call, 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. And again, we do have these raspberry roots here and lots of them. And I'm guessing a little go a long way?
A little goes a long way because they do, they're self-heading. They come up from where you planted the roots, they come up like a hosta. They come up along wherever you put them. New plants, new stems every year.
And also, we have some pieces that are really short and some that are really big.
I don't think it matters.
But I was just wondering, on these like long ones, will you get multiple plants come up? Or
If I remember, because we had some at our plant sale, and we soaked them in water, and then we planted different heights, you know, and they all came up. Some I dropped into a puddle, and they rooted.
And they grew.
Everywhere there was a little leaf that came off, there were roots. And so I'm thinking that they may be pretty difficult to kill. And so just plant them how you would plant other berries, or go online and
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I would say and experiment.
And berries, just in general, if people are there tricks, I guess, to keeping them at bay? That's what I've heard too, is a lot of them just really can take over unless you cut them back. Is that true of all berries?
Yes, I think that's all berries.
And what is the best way, I guess, to deal with them? Do you have to dig things up or cut them or what do you do?
When they come up, you know, when you plant one plant here and then the next season you have three or four stems coming up, you could, you know, use your shovel and cut those and put them where you want them. But it's something that you're going to have to kind of pay attention to, because it could easily get away. If you look at the salmon berries, you can see how they just keep coming up and up. Well, your raspberries aren't quite that aggressive or invasive, but they do come back every year.
Yeah, I was going to say salmon berries. The place I used to live at, you just saw this wall of salmon berries closer and closer and closer. And bless the person who went out there and cut them all back, because it was unreal. Like, you couldn't even move.
Yes.
They became so dense.
Yes.
And I have not that I have any experience, but people who have been coming in picking up the roots say that raspberries do really well.
That's what I hear. And we always have stems for sale at the plant sale. And you can, at the Blueberry Festival, get raspberry jam and jelly that was raised right here. So they do extremely well.
All right. And again, we've got them here, and I'm guessing a lot of people will have a lot of raspberries next year.
I hope so.
Given this. Also, because of things like this, of having to dig up your raspberries or hostas or whatever it may be, it's important, I'm guessing, to keep your tools ready to go. And
yes, it is.
And done.
We sharpened them in the fall when we put them away for the winter, and we've been using them in my yard since March. And you're starting to see rust, and they're not quite as easy to cut through plants as they were. So you need to do a little sharpening, a little polishing up on those, and on your pruners, do the same to your blades. And you know, if you don't know how to do it, go to the hardware store, tell them what you want to do, and they will show you. And then put a little grease on your pruners. I use lithium, that's what's in my garage, to make sure that the mechanisms are working and they open and close easy. I'm getting older and my hands are getting weaker, so I want them to work easily, so just keep them greased. And then when you put them away in the next 4 or 5 months, make sure that you do a good job cleaning them up, getting them oiled so that they don't rust.
And I imagine here that always is an issue.
It is always an issue. You know, if it's something that's not moving, it's rusting.
Any other things people should think about with respect to their tools?
I paint my handles yellow, bright yellow, so that if I do accidentally leave one out, it's very visible. And it's, you know, the rubber handles that you get, you can paint those yellow. They're much easier to see than that green that they use. Check to see that the handles on your most used tools are still good, that they're not cracking, because you don't want, as you're, you know, pulling down on something, to for the handle to break and you to topple over. And you just, you know, need to be real careful that way.
And how hard is it to sharpen things? Is it?
It's really not. I mean, if I can do it, you know, I put my shovel in a vise, and then I have a tool that we had a person come to the garden club meeting and show us how to actually sharpen, and he had kind of a a round curved tool that we use to sharpen them, and it's like sharpening a knife. You just gently smooth them out. You don't want to go back and forth directly across the blade, because then that would dull it. You want to go at an angle and from inside, you know, from inside the shovel to the outside, so you're going off the edge. It doesn't take long. That really doesn't take long.
How often? I mean, I guess you would know. Now is the time to do it. Like, it's not as effective as it should be, or
it's
should
you? It's probably not as effective as it was, and it doesn't take long. And again, ask somebody. You've got neighbors who sharpen tools, and, you know.
Is it something you should do several times during the summer, potentially?
Twice a year is probably enough, unless you leave them out sticking in the water or something where they can easily rust. But yeah, you need to do it just to make it easier to use.
Okay. Again, if you have any questions about gardening, give us a call at 225-9655, 1-800-557-5723. We have about 10 minutes left, so keep that in mind. Also, record keeping. I know you're big on that, and it's, I've started, I have to admit, I'm not very good about it, but trying to keep a little bit of a record about what's going on in my garden. Tell folks a little bit about that, the record keeping, picture taking that you do.
I do it out of habit. When I was learning gardening from my grandmother, she kept the garden book, and it was what we planted, how many pounds, where it was in the garden, so that they could rotate the crops, and if this particular potato variety did well, then they could buy that again. If you don't have records and your memory's not, I mean, what kind of potato I bought to plant really isn't important, then you may buy something that's not as successful next year. I do what kind of potato I bought, when I planted it, and what the harvest was. So I know that this year I bought 16 pounds of potatoes, and I bought 3 different varieties. So I will be able to tell you at the end of the year, my total potato harvest was 207.5 pounds. My biggest potato weighed 17 ounces. Oh, you know, and it's just kind of fun information to share, but it is helpful in planning for next year's gardens. Or if you planted potatoes in this area and nothing grew, you want to remember not to put them there again next year. If you have carrots that did well, if you do the French gnats, or if you do red carrots or purple carrots, and you like those and they did well in that spot, okay, let's try them there again next year.
And I imagine you also kind of track what's happening weather-wise?
I do. You know, like I wrote in yesterday's page that it was 82 degrees, and the containers were really dry, so I need to make sure that I pay more attention to that. I don't use that polysorb, which absorbs the water and holds it in the pots. So I just need to make sure that I do that. If this particular thing, if my hellebore is not happy in a container, then I know not to try that again. It just, you know, it's just information that within the next year you could forget. And pictures help you. I have some plants that I'm getting ready to sell, and so I have pictures of them in full bloom. So if you want to buy this particular dahlia, I can say, well, this is what it's going to look like in the spring when it does bloom. And it's helpful if you're looking for color patterns or, you know. And it's fun to flip back through the years and see what you've done. I also keep brochures that come, or those plant tags that come, because if it says it needs only 1 hour of sun a day and I put it in full sun, well, you know, if I buy that again, I'll put it someplace else. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And just general stuff like that.
Okay. Is there any other topics that you had in mind?
Well, one thing, if you bought plants that have to be overwintered, like your begonias, your dahlias, your fuchsias, start figuring out now where you want to put them in your garage or under your house, because you may have some prep work to do. I was looking where I put things in the garage, and there's spiders that have made a home in there. So I do want to get rid of those because I don't want spiders in there. And it's a dark corner, so I thought, well, maybe I'll paint that, and so it'll be brighter and I can see better. And so it's going to take a while to do that. Plus, you've got to clean out all the stuff that you stuffed in those places because they were empty. So it's time to start thinking about doing stuff like that.
What types of plants need to be overwintered? You mentioned a few.
Well, your begonias. You take your begonias in and you get your tubers and you store those. Some lilies need to be taken in. Fuchsias, and you trim them up and put them in there and you water them occasionally. So you've got fuchsias, begonias, dahlias. Those tubers need to be lifted and dried. I have some lilies that I have to do that with. And those are probably the only things that I overwinter. But if it's a real tender plant and you want to overwinter it, you can. If you can't take it in the house, you need to find a place where it'll be protected from the cold.
So what are you thinking of in a place you're putting it over winter? Because I imagine if you put it in a warm place in the house, that wouldn't be good.
That won't let it over winter.
It needs to rest.
Yes. So. You need to have the temperature down around 40. You don't want it to freeze. But you just need to make sure that it gets cold and stays cold. The fuchsias in their pots will need to be watered a couple times a month. Not a whole lot of water, just a little bit so that the roots don't completely die. Lily bulbs need to be lifted and washed off and wrapped in newspaper or brown paper bags and put in a box in the garage. Same way with your dahlias. It just, you know, if you have... I can't think of anything else that needs to be lifted and taken inside.
So at this point, you're just planning for
I'm
what
planning,
you're going to do.
Yes, because with 3 new fuchsias and 5 new dahlias, doesn't seem like a lot, but those fuchsias will take up, you know, one whole shelf on my garden shelf place. So putting those with the other things that I have to store, yeah, I'm going to need another shelf and a bigger space. And to get rid of the spiders. I don't like going in there when their webs are hitting me in
will
the face.
Will the spiders harm the plants at
Absolutely
all?
Absolutely not.
You just don't like them in there.
I just don't like those webs in my face.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, let me think. Oh, I lost my thought after that one. I'm sorry. Overwintering. Oh, apologies. I just lost my thought in there. Again, we just have a couple minutes left. So if you have a last minute question there, give us a call at 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. And with respect to overwintering, when do you actually start digging things up or clipping things back? Or when is winter
for
us, so to speak?
Well, the plant will tell you when it's time to take it in because it will stop growing. There won't be any flowers, and it'll start looking tired. You can, you know, take them in starting, if we're going to have real rainy, bad weather, take them in because that's just going to damage the plant, make it look nasty. And let them dry out on the floor of the garage for a while before you actually dig them up and put them to rest or trim them all back with your fuchsias and put those on the shelf to dry. Again, you need to make sure that there's air circulation around your fuchsias. It doesn't get too hot. You can't put them in next to the furnace because then that gets too warm. But you just need to find space.
Okay.
Hooks are great in the garage.
All right. Anything else that you wanted to speak about?
I think that was everything that was on my list.
Okay, and I'm going to give like just a second or two here. I see, somebody was on the phone, but apparently not a question.
Oh.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Lee, for coming in and great tips. And again, we'll keep the gardening shows going so you can learn more about all sorts of garden opportunities. And I'm sure as we get closer to winter time, we'll be talking about putting our gardens to rest.
Yes, putting them to sleep for the winter.
But right now we need to water them.
Yes, yes. And if you didn't water yesterday, it's time to water today.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.